The mules are in the corral. Welcome to Mule Talk, and I'm Cindy K. Roberts, your host.
And
our author, TV personality, and world-renowned mule trainer, Meredith Hodges of the Lucky Three Ranch.
We are back on. Meredith, what's on your mind?
I want to say right up front that I was really, really happy with the interview that you had with Dr. Josie Traub-Gargetz. She is a professor emeritus of internal medicine, retired, and she had a lot to offer about neonatal isoerythrolysis, and I hope people will listen to that interview. And the one we're doing today is kind of a follow-up, only I'm going to take it from a different perspective than Josie did. She and I did a lot of research on NI way, way back in the early 90s when I was breeding mules myself. And I had 8 brood mares that I used for breeding, and I didn't have any problems at all to begin with, but then those were the first mule foals that those mares had had.
Ah.
And so that's why I didn't detect it until they were on their second babies. And even then, most of them were fine, even with the second babies. There weren't levels or anything that required me to do much with the babies at all, but there was one, and that's how I met Josie, is I had to take that one up to CSU because he was failing on the second and third day after he was born.
Aww.
And that's how we discovered that he had NI.
Yeah.
And that's when all of this research began back then. And Josie asked me, she says, so when we discovered that your babies were having NI, and particularly into the third and fourth years of breeding, why you didn't go get different mares? And I told her, because the mules that I was getting out of these mares with Little Jack Horner were extraordinary.
Oh,
they looked like horses with long ears. They had incredible agility and athletic ability beyond anything that I had seen up to that point. Most people were breeding their saddle mares to Mammoth Jacks, and they tend to be a little bit more heavy-boned. And these mules were much more refined, but they had the genetics that Little Jack Horner possessed. Although he wasn't a mammoth himself, both his parents were 14-2 hands. Little Jack Horner was 13 hands.
Oh.
So his body was very refined, and he passed that on to his mule offspring. So he was a rather unique individual, but the other thing that made him unique and probably not so good for breeding mules was the fact that he usually ended up with NI babies after that, after their first foal. That's what would happen.
Oh.
So he was incompatible with most mares. But after we found out how to manage these NI babies, I thought, well, that's fine. I put a TV monitor in the stalls and caught the mares when they were foaling, got the muzzle on and all of that, and went ahead and did the protocol that was necessary to help these NI babies to survive. There were 3 of them over the years that I didn't catch. One of them went to CSU and had a plasma transplant or transfusion. He did really well for the first year, but then my animals were getting respiratory infections every spring, and he just didn't make it through those. It's just like having a cold in the spring. Most of them didn't get anything really bad. Not so they'd have to be quarantined or anything. They just all got a cold and then it went away. But he didn't survive that. That was too much for him. And I had 2 other ones that didn't make it as well. But most of them did. And the thing that was really horrible was when I had six mares that foaled within 3 days of each other, and they were all NI babies.
You did not get much sleep, so...
No, you sure guessed that right, because I not only got through bottle feeding and milking one mare and her baby and taking care of her baby, then the next one foaled. And so it was more like 3 weeks of no sleep. I was just delusional at that point, but I was doing my job. It was an automatic thing, and I just got up and did it every 2 hours, and that was that. Because the other thing was, is like Josie said, that there are a lot of places now that will take NI mares, pull them out for you. We have TV monitors that are better than what I had way back in the day, and so a lot of things to really help. The vets are becoming more aware of what goes on with these animals. And so they know what to do, and they know what to tell owners to do. And you can work together with your veterinarian and take care of these issues pretty well. It's certainly not a reason not to take the risk of having an NI baby. That would be kind of unrealistic, since I suspect that a lot of the Jacks are incompatible with mares. It's a hybrid breeding that's really not natural.
Right.
And when they're out in the open, 9 times out of 10, the Jacks won't breed mares out in the wild. You don't see mules running with the herds of wild Mustangs. It just, when they got plenty of room and they stay in their own groups, they generally don't interact with each other. Now, when I was over in Britain, they told me that their mules over there, they were asking me, how do you breed that small donkey to a big horse and all of that? And I said, well, you've got mules over here. How does that happen? And they said, well, they all get bred by accident. Well, I can only imagine what that might encounter. You know, I mean, that's kind of crazy. But considering the limited environment, and pressing those herds of animals together, and if somebody's got a jack and some donkeys, that jack could easily get out and be, you know, aggressive enough to go for mares. If he's not getting enough at home, he may wander and get some more. So I guess I can see why that might happen. So this mule and donkey stuff is pretty different.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I think, you know, as I had more NI babies, I realized how important it was to make sure that my facility was helpful in the way that it was set up, because these babies have to be confined in a stall with their mother and stay there while they're not nursing them and still learn all the things from the mare that they need to learn. So it was really important that the mare has a regular routine, you know, that she's got a safe place to be. And since mules are durable animals on horses anyway, the baby adjusts pretty well. And they get on their feet a lot faster than a horse baby will. They're more resistant to parasites and disease, although this is the tipping point when they get that first colostrum. That's really, you know, a necessity. Even if they are different from horse foals, they still need that, you know, good colostrum right at the front, so they can maintain all these different things that make them stronger than horse babies. And of course, they're more intelligent in dangerous situations, so they will learn how to negotiate the stall and all of that. They require less hoof care than horses in most instances, because their hooves are very hard, and under reasonable conditions, trims are sufficient, shoes aren't necessary. But as tough as they may be, they still need quality care and management. So this is really important before you get your NI baby, is to set things up so that you are ready for this all the way around, environmentally, you know, physically, feeding wise, and everything. You're equine depends on you for his safety and well-being, so the best feed in the world won't keep him in good health if you neglect other important things like your vaccinations and your warming. The mare needs to be up to snuff on all of those things. You shouldn't feed hay or grain on the floor anywhere. It might become contaminated with manure. Small, heavily used pastures tend to build up a heavy parasite load, so you want to make sure you get those harrowed regularly. Pastures should be rotated as frequently as possible to break the life cycle of the parasites. We never graze our equines on the fields that we use for harvesting hay either. We don't even take that chance. At the Lucky Three Ranch, we worm every 8 weeks in January, March, May, July, and September with ivermectin, and then break that cycle with strongid in November, and we found that that really does take care of the worms. And I've talked about how it also seems to repel flies, that they have those chemicals in their system a little bit, not enough to hurt them, but it's enough that they smell bad to flies, so you know, that kind of helps there. You know, the other thing you should always have on hand for anything that might injure your equine, you should remove it or repair it. Assemble your own equine first aid kit with the help from your veterinarian and learn the proper use of each of the items in the kit. Be prepared to handle any situation before the vet arrives. And when signs of infectious disease appear, isolate the infected animals promptly and call your veterinarian right away for any protocol that you need. And this is going to be really important with your NI babies, because we're dealing with an immunity, a compromised immunity. And so it's really important. The other thing that's important is the way that your equines are handled. You don't want a mare, for instance, that is going to be pushy or hard to lead or deal with. If she's going to have an NI baby, you're going to have to be able to get in close. You need to have the animal not only calm for yourself, but also for the professionals that you have to come in to look at them.
Oh, yeah.
Like the veterinarians, like the farriers. And for safety's sake, you should always have a handler present when the professional comes to do his job.
Okay.
Because it's not his responsibility to manage the behavior of the equine. Being consistent and calm with your equine will make professional visits much easier. You should never just talk to the professional and say, well, you know, the animal's in this pen, so you can just come and get them. Veterinarians and farriers take exception to that kind of behavior. That's really too much of an assumption on your part and presents too much danger to you, them, and your animals.
Right.
You know, most of the veterinarians and farriers I've spoken to agree on a lot of the complaints about equine owners. Number one, they say the animal is often not up and ready for treatment upon their arrival. The animals are not handled regularly or trained correctly and are difficult to treat. The owners use excitable disciplinary tactics while the professional is trying to work on the animal, putting him in physical jeopardy. The owners do not follow up on treatment instructions. And true, these complaints apply to both horse and mule owners, not just mule owners. But see, the veterinarians and the farriers are exposed to all those rumors about mules, and we're not going to dispel those rumors if our animals are unmanageable. So it's important that all your equines, mules and horses alike, are manageable. And then they don't have the opportunity to call the difference between a horse and a mule, because horses are much easier to manage than a mule that doesn't want to do what he doesn't want to do. And the veterinarians and the farrier are not as quick to forgive a mule. And a mule foal learns his behavior from the dam. So a calm and obedient mare makes for a calm and obedient foal. So when you're choosing mares that you want to get mules from, it's really important that you choose one with a really good disposition and that she is properly trained, so she will teach her baby how to be still for these professionals. and her boosters and vaccinations should be up to date, and you should always talk to your veterinarian about what kinds of vaccinations that you're going to need for your area, because they do vary, you know. And we give our shots in the spring, the one-time shots in the spring with a booster in the fall, and most of the shots that we do here in northern Colorado are the four-way vaccine with a rhino, potomac, a horse fever, West Nile, and rabies. And there may be some other ones that come up during the year that you have to vaccinate against, but you should always be talking to your veterinarian. It's also important because you're the one that interacts with the animal most often, so you know a lot of the details that the vet and the farrier couldn't possibly know. So it's important to keep good records on your animals, you know, little notes about training, little notes about some things that may have come up when you didn't have to call your vet, so that with each visit that you have with your vet, particularly, and your farrier too, you can update him on your equine's management and training status. You can alert him of any changes in the equine's behavior or the medical status. You can ask questions and learn about what your vet, you know, what your vet is doing with each visit to increase your knowledge and understanding about the things that he's having to do with your animal. These things are all important. Communication is vital between the owner and the veterinarians, and particularly with breeders. You know, setting up your facility like this is, you know, so everything is easily managed. The mare and the foal can be isolated from the rest of your horses and stuff, and so there's nobody, you know, that's chasing them around or making the mare stressed out or anything. These are all important considerations. Now, when you discuss a plan of action with your vet to prepare for the NI foal, first of all, you kind of need to know what it is. It's a complex biological puzzle that needs to be understood if you are expecting a newborn NI foal, which can threaten the life of that foal, especially if your mare has previously had a mule foal. This generally doesn't happen on the first mule foal.
Okay.
It's similar. A lot of people want to understand it, and the easiest way they seem to be able to understand it is when you explain it to them that it's similar to the problem seen in human babies called the RH incompatibility, and it's becoming more and more common as people used to have blood tests taken before they were married to see if they were going to be compatible and not have this RH incompatibility. And it's the same thing. It's where the mother's milk builds up antibodies to the foal's blood type.
Okay.
And that's basically what's going on with NI. You know, it's called different things, and it presents itself a little differently. But this is why I highly recommend that you communicate with your vet before breeding mules, and, you know, engage in talks and ask questions, and don't be afraid of him because he's a professional, and he shouldn't be afraid to talk to you about the things that you know too, because you're with that animal every day. And if you've got a mare that you'd love to get a mule foal out of, that shouldn't, you know, prevent you from being able to do that. But if there are any problems that are medical problems with that, that would flesh out that that's going to produce an NI baby, then you and your vet talking will, you know, put you both on alert on the things that you'll have to do if that's in fact what you're going to do. And so you go ahead and you find out the mare's blood type is, what the jack's blood type is, and you test for that. And you go ahead, and if the mare has had a mule foal previously, you're on high alert. Now, they say that you can test for NI 1 to 3 weeks out to find out if that mare is carrying an NI baby or not. But you have to consider that if she is, then there are other things that you need to do that may take more than 1 to 3 weeks to do.
Okay.
Now, when Josie and I were researching my mares, of course, I had several of them going all at once, and the one thing that you absolutely need on hand is colostrum that is going to be safe for the baby. So the colostrum from another mare has to be tested too. And you need that on hand for when your baby is born. And if you have a situation like I did where I had six of them, then you need colostrum for six babies. And finding that colostrum is not an easy thing to do. Now that we know more about NI because of the things that Josie and I did back in the early 90s, there are colostrum banks where they have colostrum available, but most of them in these banks are held for NI horse babies and not NI mule babies. And a lot of times it's really hard to get that colostrum for them because the people don't want to, you know, deplete their bank for the horse babies. So you have to go looking for that stuff. And that's, the veterinarian is going to have more resources than you do. In my case, I just had to go looking everywhere because there weren't these things available when we were doing this. And I found a lady in New York that was wonderful. Her name was Barbara Galbraith, and she was a thoroughbred breeder. And she had a colostrum bank for her thoroughbreds because thoroughbreds also have problems with NI babies.
Oh.
And Barbara was a dear, and we worked out a deal where she would provide me with colostrum, and then I would go ahead and milk my mares and have the colostrum safe and tested, and if it turned out that it was safe for her thoroughbred babies, then I would ship that back to her. If not, she just very, very nicely gave us the colostrum for free.
Hmm.
Now they will ask you to pay for that colostrum because it's like gold.
Oh, sure.
And once people figured out that these NI babies were pretty frequent, they couldn't afford to just keep giving this colostrum out for free like Barbara did with me.
Hmm.
She's retired now, doesn't breed her thoroughbreds, but she's back in New York and just a wonderful lady. And we still, to this day, communicate with each other and send each other Christmas cards, and I just keep thanking her over and over again for how she helped these babies of mine. And those six babies that I did all at once are still alive today and over 30 years old.
Wow.
And doing fantastic. So I can't say that having an NI baby is necessarily a death sentence. It does require responsibility on the part of the owner and on the part of the veterinarian. And if you are willing to take this on and be responsible about it, then that's a good thing to do, but you have to take on that commitment. And like I said, back then, Josie and I were researching what this really was, when the antibodies would show up in the mare. So we tested my mares at 60 days, then again at 30 days before foaling, and then again closer to the time of foaling, which falls into that 1 to 3 weeks that they recommend, to allow more preparation time. It allows you time to collect the colostrum, have it on hand, to make sure that the mare has a good stall to foal in, and a run off of it is, you know, important. You know, and then you have to prepare for the time it takes to do the lab tests and everything. And depending on where you're taking that blood, most places in Kentucky, they do test for NI, and there's three different places that do it, and they test all mares at one of the places. They don't test for the donkey factor.
Oh.
They're testing for horses. And the only place in the country that tests for the donkey factor is UC Davis in California. And so that's where the lab tests need to go if you want to get them back right away. Otherwise, they're going to, you know, have to, the labs will have to ask for the test, the stuff that, you know, you need to test for the donkey factor, and that prolongs the time. And so, you know, you need to consult with your vet well before the mare's delivery date to make a plan for testing, to make a plan for colostrum, because these are the things that your vet can take on for you, because he's got more resources than you do and more people he can talk to about this. The, like I said, the mare produces special milk called colostrum, which is full of vitamins and immunity builders for the newborn. But the NI foal, that can be deadly to the NI foal because it's full of antibodies directed against his red blood cells. And he needs that colostrum within the first 2 hours of life, or he will weaken and he will die. They can often, if you recognize a foal that has nursed, like I said, there are things that they can do, like plasma transfusions, and there's a few other things too. It's best if you just catch it, because like in the case of the one that I had the transfusion, he lived for a whole year, but then he just got a little cold and it killed him.
So you
just got to be aware of that and try to avoid that kind of situation altogether is probably the safest thing to do.
Sure.
You keep the mare in a foal, like I said, in a stall, and preferably with a camera for monitoring, although if you fall asleep for 10 minutes, you can still miss it. So that's how I did. I had the monitor, but I just drifted off for about 10 minutes, and by the time I came back to, that foal was on the ground, and before I even got to the stall, he was up and suckling. They have to be kept in the stall for the first 24, 36 hours. I've found that it's important, too, that that stall be near other animals, and they can be side by side, like in a barn that has stalls and runs right next to each other. That's fine, because having those other equines nearby can help to keep your mare from feeling alone and anxious. And we want her as calm as she can possibly be, so that when we're managing the NI foal, she's not running around the stall wanting to get out, because that's what they will generally do. Like I said, you keep the colostrum, get the colostrum well ahead of time, keep it on hand and have it stored properly. It needs to be refrigerated. Your vet can help you to find potential sources. You can purchase colostrum from other sources, and others might ask you for a trade of colostrum for their banks. Be sure you have the colostrum tested and on hand for the NI foal well in advance of foaling. The other thing that might take a little while to find are the NI muzzles, and those are not to be confused with a grazing muzzle, because with a grazing muzzle, the foal can still suckle the mare, just like he can still eat through that muzzle. You know, those are different. Personally, I don't like grazing muzzles at all. I'd rather manage my animal's time on pasture for a lot of reasons. The obvious reason is that you don't want them to overeat. You want to be able to manage them, because long ears tend to get obese. And I don't put my animals in turnout longer than 5 hours at a time. The other reason for limiting that time is that you limit their exposure to flies and insects that might really be aggravating to your animals. Now, a lot of people will try to put fly blankets on them, they'll wrap their legs and all of that kind of stuff, and to prevent the fly infestation. But what that does is that interferes with the proper operation of the hair coat. Hair coat needs to stand on end. It's got hair in there right next to the skin that is really nice and thick and blocks the invasion of these flies and other insects, so that when the animal swings its head back and knocks it into the flies, they're sitting more on the surface of the longer hairs, so they can knock them off pretty good. And limited exposure to where these insects live will limit the amount and the density of the infestation that's going on. You're not only limiting their exposure to pasture to keep their weight right, but you're also limiting their exposure to these flies and these insects and everything. And in doing so with a mare that's foaled, and not only an NI foal, but any foal, when you bring them in and they're only out on pasture for 5 hours max, then the foal is also being limited to the exposure of all of these insects and everything as well. And then the other thing is that limiting that exposure also limits the mare's anxiety level and stress level. And you want to keep her as stressless as you can and not anxious, because if she's anxious, she's going to pass that behavior on to that foal as well.
Sure.
And they don't know why they're anxious.
Mm-hmm.
They're just anxious because mom's anxious,
right.
You know.
Right.
So you got to do that. And there are places where you can actually purchase these NI muzzles from. And in the article that I will run next to this interview on Facebook, I will have the links to the three places where you can get a foal muzzle already made. Now, back in the day when I did it, we had a trainer working at my mother's place in California that actually taught me how to make these muzzles out of leather straps and fleece lining, and we made them. We would purchase calf halters, which were small enough for mules. Foal halters are too big for mule babies.
Oh.
Their heads are a lot smaller than,
okay.
Yeah. You wouldn't think so, but they are. They're a lot smaller than horse foals, and they're shaped differently. But we found that the calf halters worked really well for modifying and making these NI foal muzzles. And so that's what you see in the pictures that are along with my articles, is the ones that we made. But now, you know, in modern day, they're actually available to buy already made, which is very convenient for people. And so, like I said, you can go to the article that I'm going to run after this interview on Facebook and get those links. Be present at the birth of the foal and catching them. Muzzle that foal immediately. But the other important thing that's going to take place is the imprinting. And imprinting is super important, and it's really important that it goes well. So the last thing you want is a mare that's pacing the stall and a foal that's put on the ground, and you're trying to catch it to put a muzzle on it. Granted, it stays on the floor for a little bit, but mule babies, like I said, they'll get up right away.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to be chasing the horse and the mule foal around the stall. So it's advisable after the foal is born to go ahead and tie the mare to a stout post in the stall, and that's how one of the considerations when you pick the stall is to have a post that's next to the feeder that you can tie the mare to with about 3 feet of slack on the lead rope, so that she can be, you know, tied there while you're feeding the foal. And then you put the muzzle on the foal after you've bottle fed him, and then that's where you tie her going forward. When you take off the muzzle and feed him again, you feed the foal the replacement colostrum in the first 2 hours of birth, because that's the only time that his system will absorb the colostrum.
Ah,
so colostrum,
okay,
can't be fed later. It has to be, and that's why the mare produces it in the first 2 hours of birth.
Okay.
And so you go ahead and you feed him the replacement colostrum, and when you're doing this, you've got the mare tied up to the feeder, you've got hay in the feeder to keep her quiet and calm, because when they're eating, they'll stay quiet and calm, and you don't go chasing that foal around the stall and feed him away from her. What you do is you bottle feed the foal and position him at the mare's flank and feed him from there, because then he's in the position already as if he were nursing, but he won't be nursing. He'll be doing the bottle. You'll have that bottle right up against her flank, and he'll have his face right up against her flank. Like I said, you'll have grass hay in the feeder to help keep her occupied and calm while you're working. And like I said, too, you got to feed that colostrum as soon as he has a suckle reflex. You consult with your veterinarian about the amount of colostrum to feed the foal, and then the amount of milk, replacement milk, which will be goat's milk, was what we fed back when I was doing it, because we didn't have all these replacement foal milks that they do today. And I found that Folac was one of them that they had, but it wasn't all that good. And the baby would often just not want it and wouldn't suckle enough of it. And so when I fed him goat's milk, he just gulped that down really good. So I'm going with goat's milk. And the other thing about that, too, was I had to find a farm to get the goat's milk.
Did you?
And, yeah, I was lucky there was one just down the road, and they were willing to give me goat's milk as much as I needed, because there was no way to buy it in the stores like you can now. Mm. Now you can buy goat's milk in the stores. That is a whole lot more convenient than what I was doing way back when. You know, and then after 24 hours, they say it's safe to take the muzzle off the baby and go ahead and let him suckle the mare. But since you've been feeding that bottle right there at the flank, and I learned this the hard way, I fed in the middle, the bottle feed in the middle of the stall at first, and then I had to chase the baby around the stall and push him into the mare, and then he was wondering what I was trying to do. What are you doing pushing me around like this? I don't want any part of this. And why are you shoving my face underneath my mom? I always got fed right out there. I didn't have to twist my neck like this, you know. And so it was a real hoot trying to get him on the mare, but I soon realized the value of feeding the bottle right there at the flanks.
Oh, yeah.
Because the ones that I did that with, all I had to do was get into position, take off his muzzle, and then just push his face under the flank and line him up with the teats, and he went right for it. So it was really easy to do once I realized that that's where I should be feeding him. And sometimes it takes them a few minutes to find the teats, so just be patient, hold your position, just be there as a block, you know, so that you can hold him there, and just keep pushing his face into the same place. And he's not going to want to take his whole body away, because he knows that's where he's been fed. So it's a lot less trouble to do that. And then when the muzzle is finally removed for good, like, you might want to wait 36 to 48 hours after birth just to be safe. They say 24 hours is okay, but I'm kind of paranoid, so I waited till 48 hours maximum, and then I took off. You know, I had to milk a little bit more and spend a little bit more time bottle feeding every 2 hours. After the first 24 hours, I could go to every 3 hours to feed, which was a little better than what I was doing, afforded me a little more time. But I'd rather be safe than sorry, so that's why I waited 48 hours before I took that muzzle off. And then if they're in a stall and run that are next to other horses and everything, you can just open the door at 36, 48 hours and let them out into the run, and that should be safe for the foal to be in, and he'll learn how to be in a little bigger space, and then he'll learn about having company, and there'll be a fence between them, and that will keep all the animals safe. I do not advise turning your mares out with foals with other animals. Other animals get curious and may injure the foal, and the mare may not be able to protect her, her or him.
Okay.
So that's not safe to do with other animals that don't have foals by their sides, but they are safe to turn out with other mares that have their own foals. What happens with single animals is they, especially if they're Molly mules, they will try to steal the foals.
Really?
Yes, they will, and some Molly mules have been successful. And then the foals can't nurse because the mollies don't have milk, and they die. And the mollies won't let them go back to their mothers. So this is why it's not safe to turn your mares and foals out with any single animals. You don't know what they're going to do. Male animals, and male mules are the worst about this, is we'll chase animals that are smaller than they are and take them down and sometimes kill them, if not just hurt them. You know, you just want to be aware of that, set them up accordingly with groups that you know that they're going to get along with. That's why I always keep my minis separate from the saddle animals. Some animals get along better with others. I can't turn out my rescue mules with the animals that were born here.
Really?
They won't stand for it.
Yeah.
They'll run them to death.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So you got to take those personalities and their attributes into consideration and their situation. If they've got babies they need, and you don't have any other mares with foals, keep them alone. Keep the mare and her baby away from the other animals. And then when the babies are weaned, they need to go with animals that are going to be safe with them. You can't just turn them out with another herd of horses or saddle mules or anything like that, because they will run them to death.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It's important. If you have other foals that are being weaned, then you can turn that group out together because they're all in the same situation. You know, but these are all things that you have to think about as an owner. And these aren't things that your vet is necessarily going to know.
Mm-hmm.
They are not behaviorists.
Right, right.
They are medical doctors, and their main thing is all things medical. Just like you as an owner don't know all the medical things that they know. And that's why it's really important, you know, that you open up those lines of communication with your veterinarians and ask questions. When they're treating your animals, why are you doing this? What does this do? What does this mean? You know, and let them educate you, because the more you learn, the more you're going to be able to do before they arrive in case they're on another case when you call.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are things you can do to help your animals to live until the vet gets there. And those are really important things. And those are things that only communicating with your veterinarian and other professionals and letting them know what you know is going to keep your animals really, really safe, so that you can commit to the responsibility of your breeding program, of the animals that you buy, how you manage them. And it's really important, and I can't say how much, for you, whether you like it or not, clean those stalls and runs and those smaller areas where your animals are every single day. When you do that, number one, it's not hard to clean up a couple piles of manure once a day, but it's a real chore when it starts to build up.
Oh, you bet.
But by the time it builds up, it's already starting to create the growth of larvae, of mold,
mm-hmm.
of all kinds of things that are unhealthy for your animals. You know, you see these animals eating their own manure, and this is a normal thing for animals to do, actually. It's called coprophagy.
Can we look it up?
Yeah, you can look it up. It's actually in my Equus Revisited manual.
Okay.
I'm just not very good at saying these technical terms, and that's probably a good thing, because then I don't sound like a veterinarian with all of these terms that you don't understand.
Right.
So I try to keep it simple when I'm describing these things. But what this is there are things that the animal needs when they're digesting their food that ends up in the large intestine, and it goes through the small intestines and everything, and then gets passed on through the rectum and gets pushed out that they don't absorb. But there's still things that are beneficial to their health. And in eating their own manure, those things that got passed through the first time can get absorbed the second time through. And that's why they're not eating their manure because they're necessarily bored. It might be the only available food, and they might just be a little bit hungry, and they're eating something that they know won't hurt them. When they have food available that's not detrimental to them, they'll go for that, and they'll pretty much leave things alone that aren't good for them, although some of them are just like people. They're rather naive and ignorant about what will hurt them, and they'll eat it anyway.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you got to manage it. And that would be the case of manure that's been sitting there. To them, eating their own manure is a natural thing. But if it's been sitting for a long time and been able to grow germs and larvae and mold and things that aren't good for them, they may inhale those things too, and then they would be hurt by it. So it's just good to know these things and just clean these things up before they become an issue. And in the larger pens, like the 2.5-acre pens that we have where we keep a large number of animals at a time, I found that when you clean your pens, your animals will learn the same behaviors from you. So that if you want to teach your animal to go in one place, the best thing to do is to clean up the whole pen, and then they will go in a place, and then once they put that manure down, that will be the place they go. That's what they do when they're singles. That's what they do when they are mares with foals. That's what they will do when they are groups. One animal will put a pile down, and then the other animals in the pen will follow suit. But as you will find, that doesn't normally happen all the time exactly the same way. Because I do think that the one that puts down the first pile is probably a male. And the females will come along and sniff it and go, oh, this is where he's going, so this is where I'm going. But another male mule will come along and sniff it and go, oh, well, he's establishing his territory here, but I'm going to establish my territory over here. And then the mare mules or the mares that are in the females that are in your large group will go to one pile or another depending on which male they prefer. And if you have more males than two in there, you may find piles where each male has established his territory. And that's why they all don't go in exactly one place.
Well, that's good to know, because I like a clean paddock.
I do, too. And it's still not that much trouble to clean up the number of piles of male mules that you have.
Right.
At least it's not shuffled all over the pen, you know, which becomes an issue when you neglect to clean it up every day. Like I said, it's no big deal because they get fed in the morning and then they get turned out at noon, and we usually will do the noon feeding in the open area. We clean up the open area once a week, and it's kind of spread out, but it still allows for each one to claim their territory and keep that manure in just a few places. And it's really easy to just go shovel it up into the skid loader and haul it away, you know. And then in the pens, it's only a few piles, you know, and you put that in your wheelbarrow and take that through the barn and then put that in the skid loader and take it out and put it in a pile. But it doesn't overwork you. But what will is if you let it pile up and go, oh, well, I'll do it tomorrow. And pretty soon, tomorrow has turned into a really messy pen.
Right.
Because they no longer have any clear definition of where they can go.
Sure.
You know, and if the mare has a foal, or if you're talking about weanlings in a pen, they really don't have a routine at that point in their life. And so they're willing to just go bolting and tracking through those piles and spreading it out all over the place and thinking that's cool, you know, like teenagers do. They make a mess of your house and that's cool.
That's right.
You know, Johnny, clean up your room.
Right.
Well, I don't need to do that. Adults, they get anal about that. Setting a good example and a good routine really helps. You know, helps you, helps them to keep the workload down a little bit, you know, which keeps things more cost effective. The other thing is trying to jam those plastic pitchforks through a pile of manure that has been built up, and now because it snowed, it's frozen. Yeah, so, and then sometimes that happens overnight, you know, and then you got frozen manure in there that you can't really pick up because the snow is too deep. So you gotta wait a couple days or so, and then the sun comes out, and then you go in there and got a little bit more work to do that day, but then you get back to the old routine of doing it every day, and none of those piles build up to a whole floor of manure, frozen manure in the wintertime, you know,
yeah.
Which would be daunting. And becomes ice and slippery with ruts in it that cause, you know, sprains and tendons and stuff like that. I mean, this stuff can multiply like crazy.
Yeah.
And then it multiplies the cost of maintenance.
There you go.
Again, it's a lot of elements that you have to take into consideration, not only when you're maintaining just your general herd, but it's most important when you have an NI baby to deal with.
Well, Meredith, we've covered just about everything from mule foals to mule poop, and we almost hit how to run this country.
We'll save that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
We'll save that for another day.
Well, yeah, we can, but boy, wouldn't this country look better if we did.
Yeah, there you go, and I'm up for it.
Meredith's website is lucky3ranch.com, and you can call her at 1-800-816-7566, and I can be reached through my website, everycowgirlsdream.com.
Gotta go. My mule is looking for me.
Mule Talk is an Every Cowgirl's Dream production.